Hey everybody, this is Radio Johnny from the Latah Recovery Center. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center located at 531 South Main Street, Suite B in Moscow. Their phone number is 208-883-1045, and their hours are Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, they're open for meetings, and you can find that on their website, which is latahrecoverycenter.org. You can email them at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com, and you can also find them on Facebook and Twitter. Recovery Radio's mission is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affects us all, to make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in recovery, highlighting their experience, strength, and hope for continuing recovery. And here's some news from the Latah Recovery Center. You've probably seen in the newspaper, in the daily news, or by reading our newsletter if you get it. You know, we're working with the North Idaho AIDS Coalition Harm Reduction Program to bring a variety of harm reduction materials to the LRC. Those efforts will include naloxone, also known as Narcan. We'll have a small supply of this opiate reversal drug available free for high-risk individuals. And we do not yet know when this program will start, but it's coming. We also will have the condom shop, and we'll have a variety of free condoms and related supplies. And that program begins on May 1st. Our Safe Syringe Exchange. Beginning in May, safe, free, and anonymous syringes and other necessary items will be available for IV drug users. The SSE program participants need to take part in the HIV and hepatitis C testing that the NIAC will provide. This exchange is available on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 7 p.m. or by appointment, but will be closed on May 18th and 20th due to staff training. HIV and Hep C testing will be provided by NIC, and it's a free testing. This testing will be available on May the 6th and May the 26th from 12 to 2, and that's free and open to all. None of these items will be in the public areas of our center. They are accessed by contacting the recovery coach on duty. And also an update on remodeling, and thanks for the help. Our last newsletter mentioned our remodeling plans, and thanks to those who gave us help with this important project, and we've raised about $500 so far. Talk to Daryl by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com if you'd like to see the architect's plans. This remodel is courtesy of donations by Avistacorp and the City of Moscow, but we are also paying for it out of our budget. If you'd like to help, check can be sent to 531 South Main Street. Please note on the check that is for the renovations. Or you can donate online by going to the Latah Recovery Center homepage at latahrecoverycenter.org, and there's a link at the bottom of the page. And coming up next month in May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month, the 2021 virtual 5K for mental health will be happening. And to quote Dr. Seuss, you can steer yourself any direction you choose. The Latah Alliance on Mental Illness and several other nonprofits have partnered together to provide a great virtual mental health walk this year. You can go to the LAMI website at www.LAMIAdvocacy, that's LAMIADVOCACY.org, and click on the 5K for Mental Health tab. And speaking of LAMI, next week on Recovery Radio, we'll be interviewing Charlisa Davis and one of the LAMI interns regarding the events coming up in May, which is, like I said, National Mental Health Awareness Month. Along with the LAMI events, the LRC is once again giving out the positive message signs that we distributed last September. Each sign has "Don't Give Up" on one sign and varying positive messages on the reverse. Here's the deal. We'll deliver the sign to your location in early May, and then on or about June 1st, we'll pick your sign back up. We have a limited number, so contact us now. And if you're interested, again, contact Daryl with your name and address, and you can email him at latarecoverycenter@gmail.com. Today's guest with me via Zoom is John Wallace from Cougs for Recovery. And John, welcome.
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me on.
Fabulous. Yeah, let the listening audience know, we tried this once before, but due to computer screw-ups, we're revisiting again. So I almost feel like we're old friends at this point.
Practice makes perfect.
That's right. Well, being as I know more about you than our audience does, John, I will say, is a co-founder of Cougs for Recovery, which is over at Washington State University, primarily at the Pullman campus. And John, you are the WSU-HCA Collegiate Recovery Coordinator, is that right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So WSU and the Healthcare Authority, which is affiliated with the Washington State government, is currently granting, or they granted WSU with a sizable sum of money. It was $500,000 for a 9-month period to facilitate collegiate recovery services throughout the state of Washington. They chose four grants. They were calling them seed grant recipients. So out of that $500,000, got divvied up four ways. WSU Pullman is one of those four schools. Three other schools being Whitman College there in Walla Walla, Green River College there in Auburn, Washington, as well as Gonzaga University in Spokane. So those four schools got, that $500,000 divvied up to start collegiate recovery services at each of their schools. So collegiate recovery services, collegiate recovery programs, there's actually quite a lot of them in the country. There's 150 acknowledged ones, although there's probably quite a bit more than that. That standard is set by an organization called the Association of Recovery in Higher Education. That's the ARHE, and you can find them at collegiaterecovery.org. So they set those standards in terms of these collegiate programs being abstinence-based, having walk-in spaces, having it being not-for-profit, having housing. There's a variety of sort of standards that they've set, which I think are all great standards for schools to follow. And oftentimes these schools need, especially during COVID times when enrollment is down, and schools are even more strapped for budget, but at the same time, they're having these mental health, more students are having mental health problems. And as we all know, sometimes a part of that is drug and alcohol use. Schools need this grant money to get some of these programs off the ground. And I'll just refer to ARHE's collegiate recovery definition, actually, because I think it's a good one. They say a collegiate recovery program is a college or university provided supportive environment within the campus culture that reinforces the decision to engage in a lifestyle of recovery from substance use. It is designed to provide an educational opportunity alongside recovery support to ensure that students do not have to sacrifice one for the other. So students, sometimes they're college environments, especially somewhere like WSU Pullman, they can be what is referred to as like hostile to recovery. I have my own personal thoughts on that kind of language around it being hostile, but they talk about these environments being hostile to supporting students in recovery. And so what I take that to mean is basically these environments aren't always conducive to people entering recovery, especially at sort of this early stage, sometimes 18, 19 years old. These are often party atmospheres. Drugs and alcohol are sort of ubiquitous on campus. You can find a party any given night of the week. So these programs are designed to almost be sort of a safe or welcoming space where students can, you know, either sort of wade into recovery and be like, hey, you know, try it on a little bit. Is this for me? Is this something, you know, I'm having issues with X, Y, and Z drugs and alcohol. Is this environment something that's going to be fun and supportive and somewhere where I could see myself fitting in so that I don't need to maybe leave college and go back home, drop out of school because I'm struggling so much with my substances, like this environment's too difficult for me to maintain sobriety in. So that's why these are important. And that's what I'm doing is helping to like coordinate some of the project with my supervisor. Her name's Patricia Marweiss. She's worked at WSU for about 20 years in health promotions there. She's a co-PI on the grant, and I'm just helping sort of facilitate the SEED grants, utilization of the money, making sure they're in line with the contract. Actually, that's not my only role. I help on campus with some stuff. I help with an evaluation project, but I don't want to get too in the weeds. Or I could if you want me to, but right. Yeah, I'm helping coordinate that stuff.
Right. And, just to touch on hostile environment, that's a pretty strong word, but I can understand why they chose it. Certainly, I agree with you. Someone who is new in the university or college campus life is certainly going to be exposed to a lot of things. So the potential for, like you said, you can find a party anywhere. And, you know, I know my addictive nature, I was the kind of person in my college days where, you know, I'm only here for the beer. It's, you know, if it's too easy or too available, you know, sometimes those people that, I do know people that never, you know, really dabbled in, maybe drank a little alcohol, but never got near any sort of, other substance, you know, marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamines, those sort of things, until they got into, an older group. I mean, certainly that stuff was around, but, if you were a quote good kid and, you know, were involved in sports or whatever, and, you know, that's a bad example for me because I was a swimmer and they all smoked weed. that was my introduction to be able to find, or to be put in an environment where, you know, there's so many different things available and people talk about it in such a positive light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing, you know, hey, if you really want to have some fun, you know, try a little of this or try that. And I'm from the school that I believe there's a genetic element to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
That, if alcoholism runs in your family, you're probably predisposed to a certain extent to being, you know, having an addictive nature. And that can be dangerous. 3 out of 4 siblings in my family, you know, have had alcohol issues. And one just got smart early and realized it was just too much fun. But that being said, you know, if you're away from home, you're thrust into a college environment. Yeah, it's, I would say, maybe dangerous as opposed to hostile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think of it like, yeah, like you're talking about it as like a genetic thing. Like that's sort of the embers of it. And you start fanning the flames with a little, you know, childhood trauma, other sort of family systems that maybe weren't ideal for like normal development. And then you get someone going off to college where like the flames can really be fanned. It can really start, you know, especially in certain kind of environments, the fire could really start raging. And I resonated a lot with what you said of like, at least the first time I went to college, like I wasn't really going there for academics. I was going there for parties.
Yeah.
Motivations were
the lifestyle. Sure.
And some people can kind of get away with that or like have maybe a somewhat normal relationship to it and sort of move on from it and look back and be like, oh yeah, that was a part of my life. And then I think there's another subgroup of us that's like, it really does start the fire, and the fire can't be put out
right
until abstinence is, or recovery is, yeah, is found.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. We'll pop back to, you know, talking about childhood, you know, trauma, or just trauma, mm-hmm, in general. It mm-hmm not necessarily happen in childhood, but that seems to be an atypical jumping off place. What about the programs that you are working on addresses those trauma issues? Because I've heard it's not new, but it's come more to the forefront that a lot of counselors are treating people with that are suffering from addiction disorders with counseling to address trauma specifically, because they mm-hmm really believe it's the root of it all. You know, I'm not one of those counselors. I only, you know, have only really dealt with, you know, the after effects, mm-hmm, my mm-hmm recovery and people around me in recovery, and what little I've been able to study from kind of that perspective. So mm-hmm what do you hear about that, or what part of your programs are addressing those trauma situations?
Most of these programs in at WSU, it's the collegiate recovery program is housed within Cougar Health Services. And a part of Cougar Health Services is, you know, the medical clinic and health promotions, which is specifically what Cougs for Recovery is housed under. And another part of Cougar Health Services is the counseling services program. So someone could sort of be referred either direction. They might be already seeing a counselor. They might be having partying too much on the weekends. They might be having anxiety or depression and going to counseling services, and counseling services might refer in the collegiate recovery program's direction, or it could go the other way. So that's one sort of support students would have around that. Mm-hmm. Other ways, you know, we've worked on this thing called asset mapping. So the C grant recipients map the assets in their community, and those assets being things that are supportive of the collegiate recovery program. So things like community mental health centers or therapists in the community, AA or NA services in the community, you know, it kind of goes on and on. It gets kind of like, even like outdoor kind of services are so helpful to people in recovery sometimes, like those are considered an asset. So I digress a little bit, but the trauma-informed kind of stuff, I think you are pinpointing something that actually really could be improved within collegiate recovery, is taking this more trauma-informed approach. Because like you alluded to, a lot of the literature and a lot of the research, both, you know, academically and from our own experience, is people have had traumatic experiences, whether in childhood, teenage years, even later on as, you know, if they're a veteran, a lot of people in recovery have had those experiences. And, you know, there's something called ACEs as an acronym for ACE, adverse childhood experiences. And it's actually like the scale that they've come up with, whatever, psychological researchers, of sort of seeing how many adverse childhood experiences people have had and how that's correlated with different kinds of outcomes, like developing addiction, substance use disorder, and stuff like that. So I keep going off track a little bit, but I think collegiate recovery programs address it, but actually could do a better job of being a little more trauma-informed.
Right. This is why you all got the grant, and you know, you're all working to find those different pathways, because mm-hmm I know there's a million pathways into and through sobriety. You know, mine was through Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's wonderful and great if it works for you. If you have a problem with, you know, a different substance, Narcotics Anonymous is out there. That may be a path. I also know people who have turned back to their, you know, Christian upbringing and have, you know, found great sobriety there. So I don't rule anything out, but it sure would be nice to be able to, you know, not only identify those pathways. Well, it's important to identify the pathways to, you know, be able to offer direction to people. Because most people, by the time they get ready to start seeking, get into recovery, start seeking help of some sort, usually they're, on top of being just desperate, they've tried everything they could think of, the things I tried was, absolutely insane, but, this might work, this might work, this might work. And unfortunately for me, self-will run riot was just not going to fix me. I think it says in the AA book, it says, self-knowledge availed us nothing. I knew I was a drunk, but beyond that, I had no idea what to do next. So,
yeah, but, reminds me of another part of that literature that talks about it was upon our admissions of personal powerlessness that purposeful and happy lives could be built. So it was like, it's kind of often until we can admit that part, that's where things, that's where all the potential sort of lies in some way.
Right. Mm. Exactly. Now, also, I'm going to divert a little bit or shift gears here a little bit. I noticed in the framework that you're going on the national collegiate recovery thing, housing was addressed. Safe housing, I think, is what you're talking about. Maybe you can speak a little bit to that and maybe how it relates to the community over here in Moscow and Pullman. Or if it does yet.
Yeah, we're sort of in developing with residence life at WSU. For instance, they're in charge of all the WSU housing at the dorms, the other houses, all the on campus, maybe even off campus housing there. And so we're working with them to get a place on campus where students can have, as you said, like a safe, substance free kind of place to reside and to live and to be in community. But sober housing isn't quite enough. In some ways that is really important for people in recovery, but it also is having that community. It's kind of a bare minimum to have a dorm floor that's just no drugs and alcohol allowed on this floor. Like, that's good, but it's not the whole story, and so what you'll often see at the national level and at different schools who've been doing this for a while is these recovery housing is basically just the distinction compared to sober housing is these are actual communities and places where people can go and have fun, hang out with one another, find like-minded people who are not trying to use drugs and alcohol and who are also trying to be in recovery and maybe live a more fulfilling life than what they had before. So our current efforts have been difficult, especially in the midst of the pandemic.
All bets are off when it comes to the pandemic. Anybody who made any progress beyond learning how to use Zoom a little bit the pandemic is about as good as it's gotten. So yeah, I get that.
We have had good headway in some ways. The director at Residence Life has been very supportive and very helpful. We're actually in the works of getting a formerly multicultural house. So WSU owns several of them on Capitol Hill, on College Hill.
Right.
And they're vacant right now. And so we might be using one of those spaces to hold kind of events there. It's doubtful that anyone would be living at that kind of space because of its location within the Greek community. And that doesn't feel quite like the best spot. So we might have that for sober events. And then also maybe a couple of a dorm for people to actually live in, for people who are all in Kooks for recovery. That is on the horizon. I really hope that comes to fruition, but because that would be really important. It's one of those foundational things, having a recovery housing. So
right. Well, the recovery center, that I work with, is it's a safe place for people to come And it's only from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, basically, and then meetings and evenings and on weekends. But, you know, having that stable place to go, it's not uncommon for Alcoholics Anonymous groups to establish, you know, what they call clubs, Alano clubs. And basically, it's the same idea. And most of those run pretty close to 24 hours, and they've been able to, you know, keep going through the pandemic, you know, mainly because, you know, the work they do is deemed essential by almost everyone, local governments up to all the way up to the feds, kind of leave them alone. So yeah, having a place on campus that, you know, is a safe space for people to go to and actually, you know, get people involved in the organization. Alcoholics Anonymous, we have what they call service positions, where groups will have a general service representative, a secretary, a treasurer, an alternate GSO. And then there's positions of responsibility in the district groups, and the assembly groups that pass information in between groups and up and down the ladder. You know, having a place where people can go and sign up for those things and get involved, because I've always believed that, you know, recovery and a recovery community is really, it's like being in a herd of sheep. And, you know, when danger approaches a herd of sheep, they ball up in a circle. And the ones that are the safest are the ones that are in the middle of the circle. And like that, in recovery, people who are heavily involved, not only in their own recovery, but the recovery of people around them and involved in groups or organizations like yours, those are the ones that are going to have the best chance of surviving. Years on the outside edge that are going to get picked off, so to speak.
Well, I think about dangerous environments in a way, like, or stressful environments. A pandemic is pretty stressful in a lot of ways. So being in the middle of that herd in some ways is sort of insulating, will insulate, like you're saying, people from getting picked off by the disease of addiction.
Right.
Because it is known to do that.
Well, and speaking of organizations being in the middle of them, why don't we talk a little bit about Cougs for Recovery, which is how I understand you got into this whole program and probably into the position you're in, along with your studies as well. And you're studying to be a counselor?
Yeah, I'm at Seattle University right now in their Master of Arts in Psychology. So I'm actually graduating in 7 weeks, and I'll be hopefully done with school. I mean, I've loved, you know, school for a variety of reasons, but I also tend to be a practical person. So being in academia for too long is just like, okay. But I'm studying to be a counselor and looking forward to moving that direction. But Cougs for Recovery got started by Noel Vest, who's doing his postdoctoral studies at Stanford now. He has an amazing story. He spent some time in prison many years ago, and found recovery in prison and worked his way up through the ranks and got to do his PhD in experimental psychology at WSU, and is now doing his postdoctoral studies over at Stanford. So he had the idea of starting the collegiate recovery program at WSU, and through circumstances, he was speaking at in a class I was in. It's like about neuroscience, neuropsychology, neurophysiology, and drugs, and we were studying all that kind of stuff. And he was giving a guest speaking appearance, and I hadn't met him before. He was up there giving his story and talking about things, and he, you know, towards the end, he posted a couple of pieces of literature that were very influential to him. And I recognized one of those. So I was like, yeah, I should go talk to him. It seems like a good person to talk to. I loved his story and his energy. And resonated with him on that piece of literature being very influential. And so we talked and he's like, you should, let's talk a little more in my office. And he brought up this idea. I hadn't even heard of collegiate recovery before that. So that's sometime in 2017. And so he had the idea with, you know, Patricia, who's my supervisor now and was his PhD advisor at the time. They were wanting to do this on WSU's campus. Kind of got started there in 2017. We got, you know, registered as an RSO, which is a registered student organization. And we started holding meetings from the start. So we hold what are called all recovery meetings on campus at that time. And we were holding those in the Compton Union building there, the nice student building there on campus. And yeah, I mean, we've had sort of varying amounts of people get involved in the students involved in the program. These all recovery meetings are sort of like non-denominational. So someone from, you know, if your path to recovery is 12-step, NAAA, if your path to recovery is more of a Christian fellowship, if it's SMART recovery, if it's refuge recovery, these meetings are sort of all inclusive in that way, which I think is good for a population that is just sort of sometimes wading into, you know, what is recovery, and they can be exposed to a lot of different things. And it's also nice because it really creates community. And that's kind of how we've maintained it over the last 4 years. And we're currently on Zoom holding those meetings every week. Hope to sort of expand it out, especially once we're back in person, to like a lot of schools will do like, okay, you know, Mondays an AA meeting, Tuesdays an NA meeting, Wednesdays at the all recovery meeting, Thursdays, you know, SMART recovery. So they kind of switch up the schedule. Right. But as Kooks Recovery currently exists, is that one meeting a week, a place where students can gather, unfortunately over Zoom, or fortunately over Zoom. I'm grateful we have a place to gather at least. That's kind of the most of it right now. We also have offered scholarships. So with the grant money, we pieced off some of that money to offer students in Kooks Recovery. They got to apply for scholarships. And I think those will keep going on because good news, since the last time we talked, Johnny, we got funded, or the HCA is granting at minimum one more year of collegiate recovery services throughout Washington State, probably 2 years. So
great.
I think more money's on the table, which more money is good for services like this. And in the future, another thing Kooks Recovery hopes to offer is like more sober events. Uh-huh. Sober tailgate, rafting trip, hiking trip, camping trip, other, you know, bowling nights, sober movie nights, all that kind of stuff. So.
Well, great. Yeah. And can't wait for camps to open up. Unfortunately, they got slammed back into phase two here a week ago. I'm sure that'll lift though. I mean, the vaccinations are rolling out to everyone and, mm-hmm. Things are starting to lighten up a little bit. I was down in Lewiston today, and half the stores people are wearing masks and the other half they're not, and they don't have a mask mandate anymore. And the Nez Perce County is on the extreme low risk list, mm-hmm. according to North Idaho Public Health. So yeah, well, keep our fingers crossed that things will come back around there a little bit.
Well, we know how important it is to like share space for people in recovery, sharing space together. You know, it's, I guess in some sense, you and I are sharing space right now, but in another way, it's like, you know, it is important for us to sit in the same room together. I think there's something really like healing to that. So.
Right. I've been chairing a meeting on Sunday morning for AA, and we've been able to use the resources at the Latar Recovery Center, both to have people in person and to use their Zoom account. And, it's kind of surprising. We're getting community from outside the area. You know, there were a couple of people who used to be very involved in AA in the Moscow and Pullman area who now live far and wide. Some as near as Washington, some as far as, you know, Michigan, New York, Maine. And, they'll get to pop in, which is, you know, something that wouldn't normally happen. They wouldn't normally just walk in one day, to a meeting. But we've also had people, it's the oddest thing, people several times have joined in from Moscow, Russia, 9:30 at night, their time. And they just want to, check out that the meetings in that other Moscow. And, I know that's people awesome. In the program who have done the same thing. They're hooked up with people in New York. Oh, I found this great group in Scotland. Can't understand half what they're saying, but they got, a real good program. And it's so there are advantages to it. But
for sure.
On the other hand, we will get people that join in who, don't necessarily want to put their face up on the screen and have a, little emoji of something or other and don't share and just sit in the background. But you know what? I've seen people come into meetings. They come in a little late. They sit way in the back and they duck out as soon as the meeting's starting to wind up. But hey, if that's going to be your best effort trying to get into sobriety, well, then that's just going to have to be your best effort for now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you won't be too scared off to come in again and maybe ask a question or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I've often wondered, in AA, the sort of the guiding principle is the newcomer. The guiding motivation is to help people who are newcomers. And so I wonder how Zoom has, is that a barrier to entry, or actually does it making it easier for people to go to their first meeting, for instance? I don't know.
Right. And we'll never know because anonymity is the spiritual foundation, So
yes.
Yeah. We think we have, that's one of the funny things when people try and quote statistics on AA, they're like, well, we think, does anyone have the numbers? No. And there's a reason for that. But I can tell you from my experience, I've traveled all over the world. And for some reason, there seems to be an 800, some sort of toll free number in every country that you call and find out there's a meeting two blocks from where you are. I've been on a ship at sea and heard an announcement on a cruise ship. Friends of Bill W. are meeting in the smoking lounge in half an hour. Okay, my people are here. Let's go check it out. Yeah, that's awesome. Some interesting meetings as well. But I digress. Now, I know you, you've shared with me a little bit about why you got into recovery, and I'm hoping you can share a little bit about that without being too specific or graphic. Don't want me to pass out if I get terribly awful. I can't.
Yeah, no, it's been a journey. I mean, to think, how earlier you were asking me what I'm up to now and finishing grad studies and hoping to be a counselor and thinking about, 5 years ago and before that, and the sort of difficulties I had with drugs and alcohol and how it sort of, in some ways it's happened very slowly. I mean, started using when I was like 17, and by the time I'm 29 now, got sober and in recovery at 23. From 17 to 23, things really just sort of eroded over that time, because of mental health reasons, but specifically around drug and alcohol issues. And I appreciate various communities that sort of stepped in to, not even stepped in, that were there to sort of support me when I showed up, particularly 12-step style communities. and gave me sort of like a design for living that was going to work, that whereas what I was doing before wasn't working. And you mentioned a phrase like self will run riot. You know, I was doing that, but wasn't aware of how much I was doing that until others sort of taught me, you know, gave me some lessons in life that I still need to use today. So I would say my struggles with drugs and alcohol were, it's interesting. I wouldn't take them back. I also wouldn't wish them on anyone else, you know.
Right.
It's kind of a weird paradox of like, I wouldn't want anyone else to go through that, but it gives me so much meaning in my life now, especially as the days and months and years from that go on. It's like, you know, in some ways it feels like I've lived two lives, and some of the work now is sort of integrating like, oh no, that was the same person in some ways.
Right.
And how to make sense of that. So they made my life unmanageable, and they made me live, you know, drugs and alcohol. They made my life unmanageable in a way that I got really depressed and in a dark place, and getting into recovery as a result of the legal system, actually, it sort of had a nudge from the judge in that regard. Yeah, it feels like the stars sort of aligned in some ways, and I'm really grateful that I was able to enter recovery at a younger age and able to fumble around with it a little bit. I mean, there was a couple of instances where things were difficult, and kind of had to come back with my tail in between my legs, but was only met with unconditional love from people in mutual aid groups like 12 step. So I guess the way that looks like for me now is still attending sort of peer support mutual aid groups on a regular basis, still utilizing, you know, the spiritual principles that groups like that have given to me. Sometimes I learn the hard way now that it's, you know, I need to constantly rely on those rather than sort of, you know, go the other way and feel the burn and have to, you know, sort of go back. But yeah, they still keep me away from that first one, which is, I think, the most important thing.
Right. Staying grounded. I know my personal experience, you know, had I not gone through what I went through, I would not be in the position to do the things I'm doing today, which is, you know, producing this little radio show once a week, or, you know, volunteering at the recovery center, you know, all those things, you know, the ability to talk to someone and, you know, honestly say, yeah, I know where you're at. I know what you're going through. I know what you're feeling. And, you know, maybe I can show you a way out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can follow the path I took and, you know, find that it's going to be a little easier. You know, I guess it depends on if you believe in, you know, a divine plan or whatever. You know, I have a power which I refer to as a God of my non-understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time I think I have it figured out, I get another lesson. And I have learned. And, you know, it's like, in retrospect, I'm looking back and going, yeah, this, I had to go down this path to get to where I am now, to where, you know, I'm at a point where I'm useful to the rest of the world rather than just trying to be useful to myself. And I wasn't very useful to myself, unless, you know, self-destruction has been redefined as a positive attribute. I don't think so. I haven't read that anywhere yet.
Not recently, yes.
No. I'm sure it's coming, though. I'm sure it's coming. We're getting pretty close to the end of time here. I'm just curious, what do you see coming in the future for, you know, the program you're working in and Kooks for Recovery? What's the bright side of what's happening next?
Yeah, I think.
As far as you can see in your crystal ball.
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to say. I think after, you know, once classes return to in person and students descend on Pullman in the fall, more than likely. I think we honestly might see a lot of like, people are going to party in a way, you know, you hear reports of people like the 20s are going to be like the roaring 20s. I feel like, you know, next year people might, there might actually be some of that in places like at WSU Pullman. And so I think that means that collegiate recovery programs, mental health services are as important as ever, because people have felt the stress and isolation of the pandemic. So maybe coming, you know, as they're coming back to a collegiate environment, they're going to want to socialize more. And that often means more partying and drinking and drugs. And so something like Kooks Recovery or other collegiate programs in the state or in the nation, like I said, are as important as ever. And so I think we'll see more students being involved, whether or not they're in recovery, if they want to just kind of be allies, be supportive of the group in a variety of ways. You know, we're not existing, you know, we use the safe space like it's a bubble. We don't want to be so safe that we're exclusive to people who just want to be supportive. So I think that we'll see more people getting involved as, you know, people already in recovery. Maybe they entered recovery during the pandemic. Maybe they were in recovery before the pandemic and they're just coming to WSU. Maybe it's people who are allies of the program. But I think we'll see more students. I think we'll see, this might be optimistic, I think we'll see housing, recovery housing. I think we'll see more sober events. I think we'll see a sort of fine tuning of how we're utilizing this money. Uh-huh. And hopefully beyond the 2 years, these can be funded for even longer, because it seems like the Washington state government and the healthcare authority, the HCA, are sort of opening their eyes to the importance of these services, especially for previously incarcerated people transitioning out of prisons and jails and going to 2 year institutions and maybe transferring to a 4 year institution like WSU. So I think that, you know, that's a couple of years maybe down the line, putting those systems in place is not always easy because of, honestly, bureaucracy slows things down in a lot of ways. But yeah, that's kind of where I see it going. And, you know, maybe a little more academic support, academic advisors who are maybe more informed of this group and can help students specifically in this group. Uh-huh. And yeah, like a reduction of stigma on campus as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I would imagine there'd probably be a lot of promotion, you know, absolutely, you know, recovery radios, we reach all the way into Pullman on a good day if the sun's just right. And, you know, we will always be here for you to, you know, help promote, advertise, mm-hmm. and, you know, get people aware of, you know, what you guys are doing over there. And I know you and I will have a relationship going forward. So I don't have to worry about missing out on that. And you know, as long as I'm talking about it, if you're at WSU now and you've got a way to sneak across the border and it won't violate any terms of parole or probation, you know, come on over to the Lata Recovery Center. We're on Main Street, right by 6th. Next to One World Cafe, and come on over here and, you know, come to a safe spot. Not only do we have the recovery resources there with peer counseling, peer-to-peer counseling, but we also have counselors there now that are kind of attached to both the Rural Crisis Center and the Recovery Center side. So, you know, we're trying to be that full service station, and, you know, absolutely invite Cougs on over into Vandal territory. You don't even have to tell us. Don't even tell us. We don't need to know.
We could sneak on in there.
That's right. That's right. Just leave your kitty cat hats at home. That's all.
I appreciate the invite over, and yeah, I hope to be over in Pullman at some point soon. And I'd love to be back at the Lata Recovery Center. It's a great little great space for people in recovery.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to wrap it up right now. And, you know, thank you again, Don, for coming on and letting us know what's going on with that. It's all very exciting. And
it is.
And, look forward to, you know, seeing some of these things become real in the not too distant future, COVID permitting. That's it for me today. Denise, hopefully you'll be back with us in upcoming interviews. And if you think you have a problem with drugs, alcohol, or mental health, you do.
A worried man with a worried mind. No one in front of me and nothing behind. There's a woman on my lap and she's drinking champagne. Got white skin, got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire tinted skies. I'm wild dressed, waiting on the last train. Standing on the gallows with my head in the news. Any minute now I'm expecting all hell. People are crazy and talks are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. This place ain't doing me any good. I'm in the wrong town, I should be in Hollywood. Just for a second there I thought I saw something move. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool here would think he's got anything. A lot of water under the bridge, a lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Been walking 40 miles, a bad road. If the Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some things are too hot to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with the losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Just don't show it. You can hurt someone and not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be like an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman that don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in the lake. I'm not that eager to make a mistake. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm on a rail.